In recent months, members of the mainstream media have been suggesting the need for a change in our diets to save the planet. Consider this excerpt from an article published by the UK-based The Guardian on September 10, 2011, by Felicity Lawrence. She is a special correspondent for The Guardian and best-selling author.
Is It Time We All Gave Up Meat? By Felicity Lawrence, The Guardian, September 10, 2011. The two most pressing reasons for cutting back on meat today are climate change and global population growth. The post-war years have seen an explosion in the numbers of animals intensively reared for meat and milk. This livestock revolution and the change in land use that has gone with it, however, now contribute nearly one-fifth of global greenhouse gas emissions. Most people could do more for the climate by cutting meat than giving up their car and plane journeys. The UN predicts that the number of farm animals will double by 2050. Except, of course, it can't. The livestock of Europe already require an area of vegetation seven times the size of Europe to keep them in feed. If people in emerging economies start eating as much meat as we do, there simply won't be enough planet. Intensive meat production is a very inefficient way of feeding the world. Farm a decent acre with cattle and you can produce about 20 pounds of beef protein. Give the same acre over to wheat and you can produce 138 pounds of protein for human consumption. If the grain that is currently used to feed animals were fed instead directly to people, there may be just enough food to go round when population peaks.
Will food scarcity and climate change soon be the most pressing issues of our world, or are they already? The next two articles we have excerpted, also from The Guardian, elaborate further.
Food prices driven up by global warming, study shows. Scientists warn that farming practices must be adapted to a warmer world and rises in global population. By Damien Carrington, The Guardian, May 5, 2011. The new research joins a small number of studies in which the fingerprint of climate change has been separated from natural variations in weather and other factors, demonstrating that the effects of warming have already been felt in the world. Scientists have shown that the chance of the severe heatwave that killed thousands in Europe in 2003 was made twice as likely by global warming, while other work showed that the floods that caused £3.5 billion worth of damage in England in 2000 were made two to three times more likely. Food prices have reached new record highs this year and have been implicated as a trigger for unrest in the Middle East and Africa. A rising appetite for meat is a critical factor, said Wolfram. We actually have enough calories to feed the world quite comfortably. The problem is meat is really inefficient. As many kilograms of grain are needed to produce 1 kilogram of meat, he said, as countries get richer and have a preference for meat, which is more expensive, they price people in poorer countries out of the market. Crops for animal feed destroying Brazilian savanna, WWF warns. By Dan J. Lloyd, The Guardian, April 11, 2011. The rising global appetite for meat is contributing to the destruction of enormous wooded grasslands in southern America, WWF warned on Monday. While satellite data and stronger law enforcement have led to a decline in deforestation in the Amazon rainforest, the Cerrado, a savanna that covers more than one-fifth of Brazil, has experienced ongoing deforestation due to the expansion of soy agriculture, led by demand for soybean to produce feed for factory-farmed animals. Human activity through agriculture and cattle rearing has devastated 50% of the Cerrado, with only 20% of it still intact. During her visit to the region last week, UK Environmental Secretary Caroline Spelman said, "The Cerrado is a huge area, as big as France, Germany, Italy, Spain and the UK put together. It's globally important in terms of biodiversity and storing the world's carbon dioxide, but it doesn't receive the same attention from the international community. Because of that, people are not aware of the uncertain future it faces.
In a dangerously warming world, the impacts of animal factory farms only worsen a devastating trajectory for our environment. The following is an excerpt from the New York Times about animal farm pollution. Keep in mind that this local case is just part of a worldwide problem.
Chemicals in Farm Runoff Rattle States on the Mississippi, by Leslie Kaufman, The New York Times, June 2, 2011. Dead zones have been occurring in the Gulf since the 1970s, and studies show that the main culprits are nitrogen and phosphorus from crop fertilizers and animal manure in river runoff. They settle at the mouth of the Gulf and fertilize algae, which prospers and eventually starves other living things of oxygen. Government studies have traced a majority of those chemicals in the runoff to 9 farming states. And yet today, decades after the dead zones began forming, there is still little political common ground on how to abate this perennial problem. Scientists who study dead zones predict that the affected area will increase significantly this year, breaking records for size and damage. The survey found that corn and soybean crops were the largest contributors to the nitrogen in the runoff, and manure was a large contributor to the amount of phosphorus.
While majestic forests and vital oceans suffer ongoing ravages due to demands for meat, another plague erupts. It's the relentless spread of antibiotic resistance due to drug use on animal farms. According to 2-time Pulitzer Prize-winning U.S. author Nicholas Kristof, the loss of 31 people in Europe from a rare strain of E. coli have raised alarms worldwide, but we shouldn't be surprised. He explains why in his column for the New York Times.
When Food Kills, by Nicholas D. Kristof, The New York Times, June 11, 2011. The Food and Drug Administration reported recently that 80% of antibiotics in the United States go to livestock, not humans. And 90% of the livestock antibiotics are administered in their food or water, typically to healthy animals to keep them from getting sick when they are confined in squalid and crowded conditions. The single state of North Carolina uses more antibiotics for livestock than the entire United States uses for humans. This cavalier use of low-level antibiotics creates a perfect breeding ground for antibiotic-resistant pathogens. The upshot is that ailments can become pretty much untreatable. The Infectious Diseases Society of America, a professional organization of doctors, cites the case of Josh Nahum, a 27-year-old skydiving instructor in Colorado. He developed a fever from bacteria that would not respond to medication. The infection spread and caused tremendous pressure in his skull. Some of his brain was pushed into his spinal column, paralyzing him. He became a quadriplegic, depending on a ventilator to breathe. Then, a couple of weeks later, he died. There's no reason to link Nahum's case specifically to agricultural overuse. But looking at numbers, by far the biggest element of overuse is agriculture. We would never think of trying to keep our children healthy by adding antibiotics to school water fountains, because we know this would breed antibiotic-resistant bacteria. It's unconscionable that Big Ag does something similar for livestock. One of the most common antibiotic-resistant pathogens is MRSA, which now kills more Americans annually than AIDS and adds hugely to America's medical costs. An article this year in a journal called Applied and Environmental Microbiology reported that MRSA was found in 70% of hogs on one farm.
The final two media reports for today focus on the solution. First, an article published in the New York Times summarizes a speech by His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales made this year at Georgetown University, USA.
The Sustainable Prince, by John M. Broder, The New York Times, May 4, 2011. Prince Charles said that organic, locally grown food accounts for only 2-3% of sales in the United States and Europe because it remains more expensive than food produced by industrial methods. One of the reasons for the huge price discrepancy, he said, is that governments encourage large-scale corporate farming through a variety of subsidies. These include direct support like payments to farmers and tariffs on imported agricultural goods, and indirect subsidies by not charging for the external costs of such farming methods, like air and water pollution and emissions of climate-altering greenhouse gases. The royal family has long received sizable government subsidies for its vast land holdings, many of which are classified as agricultural property. As things stand, doing the right thing is penalized, the prince said. Has the time arrived that we need to take a long, hard look at how public subsidies are geared? He said that governments should grasp one of the biggest nettles of them all by replacing the subsidies for food factories that mistreat animals and harm the land with incentives for a more humane and durable form of agriculture. The point, he said, is to achieve a situation where the production of healthy food is rewarded and becomes more affordable and the Earth's capital is not so eroded.
Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall is a popular food and cookery writer and broadcaster in the UK. On August 26th, The Guardian announced notorious carnivore Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall now eats little or no meat or fish. Here he explains why.
Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall, The Joy of Veg, by Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall, The Guardian, August 26, 2011. We eat too much meat in the West, too much for our own health and far too much for the welfare of the many millions of animals we raise for food. I believe that factory farming is plain wrong environmentally and ethically. So it saddens me to say that, despite some recent significant gains in the UK on poultry and pork welfare, the problems associated with the industrial production of meat are, globally speaking, as bad as ever. I now understand that in order to eat these foods in good conscience, I have to recognise, control and impose limits on my appetite for them. To that end, over the last 18 months or so, I have undergone a sea change in the way I cook. It began as an exercise, but it became nothing short of a small revolution. It is now the case that most of the meals I eat contain no meat or fish. And I can tell you, with my hand on my heart, that I eat better than ever. Why don't I allow a modest amount of meat into most things? Because it would be a cop-out. That's why. That approach is ultimately the wrong mindset for serious change. It suggests a kind of clinging onto meat, as if a meal is incomplete without it. That, I think, is the feeling we need to let go of. Meat is so familiar, so convenient, the easy route to something we instantly recognize as a proper meal. But there is absolutely no reason why we can't embrace vegetables in the same way. I have actually found it all rather liberating.
We appreciate the journalists, The Guardian, The New York Times, and other media groups who have been raising the issue of seriously changing our food choices to save the planet and our lives. May we all adopt, as Mr. Fearnley Whittingstall said, the liberating, organic, vegan way of living and farming for a safer future. Thank you for joining us on today's program. Coming up next is Words of Wisdom after Noteworthy News. Please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television. Blessed be your noble endeavors. The articles featured in today's program are available to read on the following websites.
For more details, please visit www.suprememastertv.com/EE.